Welcome to Role Playing History, the podcast where we explore the history of role playing games. I'm Wayne Davis, and I'll be your guide for today's tour. Okay, so this is the part where I usually give you the episode number and the subject. But before I do that, I wanted to clarify a couple of things. I realize that on the episode count of your podcast provider, we're showing as having more than 100 episodes at this point. And that's because they all count the total number of postings I make. I don't count those drops I did letting you know we weren't having episodes, or that one time early in the history of the show where I did that abysmal bonus episode. I only count the episodes where I actually give you an episode number in the intro. So, this week is officially episode 100. Stratomatic. Now I know what you're thinking. Stratomatic? On a podcast that covers role-playing games? How the hell does that compute? Let's take a second to explain how this works before I get into the history and break the game down. Question number one, does Stratomatic force you to take on the role of someone? Yes. Do you roll dice to take actions? Yes. Do you have stats and charts to determine the roles of those dice? Yes. So in a loose interpretation of the definition, Stratomatic is a tabletop role-playing game. Granted, you don't necessarily get to create your team from scratch, but you've got enough different options that you can play the game hundreds of times and never play the exact same team twice. So that's another thing it's got going for it. Plus, I had nearly a dozen different requests for this subject before I actually sat down to record it, and since I'm a big fan of giving you what you want, Stratomatic it is. So with all of that out of the way, let's crank up the tour bus and get to it. Stratomatic is the brainchild of Hal Richman. As a child in Glenhead, New York, he admits that while his father loved him, they didn't have what we'd call a warm and fuzzy relationship. As a result, Hal decided to give sports a try. Needless to say, he was a lot like most of us. The mind was willing, but the body wasn't quite able. However, Richman noted in a 2016 interview for NFL.com that he, quote, had an excellent knowledge of baseball. It was my first great love. My father gave me a book when I was about 8 years old on the great Hall of Fame players, and that really got to me, end quote. It got to him so much that by the late 1950s, the teenaged Richman had developed a tabletop baseball game that he and some of his friends played. While it was similar in a number of ways to what would eventually become Stratomatic, it took a few years of refinement. By 1961, he believed he'd done as much as he could to work out the kinks in the rules, and he started up the Stratomatic Company to release his game. Now, by that point, Richman was a mathematics student at Bucknell University, and he used the basement of his house as his office, selling the game from there and taking out ads in Sports Illustrated to try to drive sales. Needless to say, that didn't work very well. The company lost money until 1963. What was the magical adjustment that suddenly saw his sales increase? The decision to once again modify the game. This time, though, he hit on the magic formula. The game included a card for every player in the major leagues at that time. Now, for the record, there were only 20 teams in 1963. But even with that, there were a lot of players and stats to work out. So this was no simple undertaking. Now, before we move along on the timeline, you might be asking where Richman got the inspiration for building his game the way he did. Truth be told, there had been baseball simulation games on the market for about as long as there had been baseball teams and leagues. Ethan Allen's All-Star Baseball was exceptionally popular in the early part of the 20th century, and it was one of many games Richman played as a child. However, by the age of 11, he'd become frustrated with the reality of the games. In that same NFL.com article, he noted that none of the games he'd played accounted for the abilities of the pitcher. He also noted that the Ethan Allen game used a spinner instead of dice, and he believed that it was not only an imprecise tool for determining outcomes, but the spinner itself would wear out or break fairly quickly, leaving you with no way to continue playing the game without buying an entirely new game box. So that's where the dice came into play. And being into math at such a young age, Richman did his homework. He rolled 2 6-sided dice, since those were the only dice widely available at the time, 5,000 times and logged his results. He then double-checked his results to figure out what the probability of each number would be. Those numbers were used as he sketched out the basics of the new game, then further utilized as he refined it. As Glenn Guzzo noted in that same NFL.com article, quote, "Creating this game was his psychological escape where he could retreat to his room to be with his heroes," end quote. Getting back into the timeline, once Richmond started including cards for all of the Major League Baseball players, sales of the game began to rise, and it eventually expanded. As many of you figured out from the article I've been referencing, Strat-O-Matic was expanded to offer a football game in 1968, and Richmond built that the exact same way he built the baseball version. He noted, though, that it was much harder to do. Quote, "Football I didn't know that much about. So what I had to do, I got season tickets for the New York Giants, went a couple of years, took notes, and then came up with a game. And it took a lot of testing. I tested my friends, basically, and it was a totally different game than anything out there," end quote. Much like the baseball genre of tabletop games, there were also several tabletop football games out there by mid-century. However, they suffered from the same issues that plagued their baseball counterparts, as the ability of the players weren't taken into account, and the results weren't nearly as accurate as they could have or should have been. Here's an analogy for you old school video gamers out there. Think the difference between Tecmo Bowl and Madden, especially if you had the Raiders in Tecmo Bowl. Two words, Bo Jackson. Richmond wasn't done creating. In 1973, he created what he called an advanced version of the baseball game, then added a basketball version in 1973 and a hockey version in 1978. And again, each time he added a new sport, he took the same methods he'd used in the previous versions and applied them to the new sport. In case it hasn't been apparent to this point, Richmond was focused heavily on replicating the abilities of the athletes represented as accurately as possible under the restraints of the medium, with the overall idea being to give the player the sense of being both a manager and actually feeling like they're involved in the game. And I know the next question you've got. How can you feel that close to the game when all you're doing is rolling dice and checking the results? What the hell do you think you're doing when you play D&D? I mean, I'll grant you that D&D has a DM who's sort of narrating the action for you, but I think it's pretty safe to say that the majority of Americans have seen at least one baseball game on television over their lifetime. So it would be fairly easy to do your own version of play-by-play. And if you're playing with another person, there's two of you to bounce commentary off of, so it won't be like you're talking to yourself. Unlike myself, when I played Strat-O-Matic as a kid, which probably explains a whole hell of a lot about me. While there are the other major sports I've mentioned in this show, the bestseller and favorite by far is still the baseball game. And when you say Strat-O-Matic to somebody, baseball will be what they think of 99 times out of 100. And it's not just average Joes like you and me. Hundreds of Major League Baseball players over the years have professed their love for the game. So has Bob Costas, who's considered by most, including myself, as an ambassador of the sport. Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick even wrote about their own experiences playing Strat-O-Matic in the offices of ESPN in the early 1990s, in their late 1990s book about SportsCenter. There have also been numerous actors, politicians, religious figures, and academics of all kinds who've written about and played the game, and all of them have spoken of the game in reverent tones. Spike Lee even showed people playing Strat-O-Matic in his 1994 film, Crooklyn. There have been a number of Strat-O-Matic leagues formed over the years, with the East Meadow Strat-O-Matic Baseball League in East Meadow, New York being the oldest. Founded in 1972, it's still exceptionally active today. And before you ask, yes, Strat-O-Matic has evolved with the times, as you can now play the game online. Check out their website, strat-o-matic.com, if you're interested in seeing what that looks like, or if you're interested in picking up an old school version of the game. So the question begs to be asked, why was this game so popular? To those who've lived only in the age of video games, I know it's really hard to understand. And for the millennials and Gen Zers out there with access to 2K and Madden games, it's really hard to understand. But for those of us from the Gen X group or older, we know. And I'll share why with you now. You have to understand that for us, our first video game was Pong, or maybe Space Invaders, depending on what part of the generation you were born into. If you were a boomer, it's definitely Pong. So for us, board games, card games, and miniature games were the only types of games we had available to us. And even when we had video game consoles, the graphics were basic. And by today's standards, it'd be downright primitive. I mean, don't get me wrong. We dug our games when we got them. But compared to what's out there today, no comparison. Anyway, all of that meant that if we wanted a realistic sports experience, if we were lucky, we got Strat-O-Matic. But it required a bit of an investment. It wasn't cheap, and new versions came out every year to take into account the previous season's worth of stats. But if you had a copy, you played the hell out of it. I read stories online while I was researching this episode from folks who had brothers and sisters they played with, and they'd play for days straight during school breaks and rainy days during the summers. Others talked about playing the game with their own fathers and grandfathers, while others noted it was their mothers who got them involved and played with them. So, much like going to the games, playing Strat-O-Matic was a way for a lot of us kids to bond with our parents. It wasn't that way for me, but I'm not complaining. Trust me. For me, it was an escape from reality, especially when I didn't have anybody to play D&D with. If you're curious about that, I just did an episode about a month ago about my own experiences, so check that out in the archives. Anyway, I got my copy used, and when I got it in 1981, it was already about 5 years old. So not only were the stats way out of whack, but many of the players weren't in the league anymore. I couldn't have cared less, though. I mean, I had the chance to play the game I love and use actual major league players to do it. And like I mentioned earlier, I did my own play-by-play for my games. I even recorded some of them on my old-school cassette player, though I have no idea where those tapes went to. It would be interesting for the 50-year-old me to go back and listen to what the 8-year-old me had to say. Would probably make me cringe, but that's the cost of doing business sometimes. So when you ask why the game remains popular, memories would be the answer. Nostalgia would be as well, since the two are pretty much always connected at the hip. Plus, as we Gen Xers get into our 50s, I think there's a longing for the things we enjoyed as kids. And since many of us now have the kind of money to buy new versions of those things, we like to take that trip down memory lane. And if you're curious as to how Richmond gets away with using the actual players for the game, the company has licenses with the players' associations from all the sports they cover. Just thought I'd mention that with all the negative game stuff that's been going on lately. Now, I do have an obligation to note that from all the various articles I read for this episode, I noticed something troubling. The number of players under the age of 30 has been steadily decreasing for more than a decade. It's something many of the reporters following the game have also noted, and they've been voicing their concerns that if a way isn't found to appeal to the younger generation, Strat-O-Matic might eventually find itself going the way of the dodo. I don't think I have to tell you the number one reason why it doesn't appeal to younger gamers the way it once did, especially since I just referenced it about, a minute and a half ago. Trust me, if I'd have had 2K or Madden back in the day, I probably wouldn't have gotten into Strat-O-Matic either. But if you're a tabletop role player, I'd highly suggest you check it out. Okay, so let's finish off the history section of the show. Hal Richmond still owns the Strat-O-Matic company, though he's admitted that over the past decade he's been looking for either investors or buyers for the company, and it's assumed by most that it's because of his age. He's also exceptionally secretive about his sales numbers and revenue, so we have no idea how many copies are sold in a given year. What I could find out is that Richmond did admit to NFL.com back in 2016 that since 1963, he's never had a year that wasn't profitable, and he also claimed that 2010 had been the second best sales year in the history of the company, with sales up 12% over the previous year. So, 60 years in, Strat-O-Matic is still making an impression on the game world. In fact, I saw a ton of posts and stories about older gamers who made the pilgrimage to New York to visit the offices of Strat-O-Matic, both to take in the history as well as pick up copies of the game. A number of these old schoolers noted that they not only wanted the game for themselves, but to also try to get their kids and grandkids into it so they could enjoy the game as much as their fathers and grandfathers before them had. For the future of the game, I do hope that works out. Okay, so I spent a whole lot more time covering history than I usually would, but I hope that in the end it was worth it. Let's move on and check out what makes Strat-O-Matic tick. And for our purposes here, I'm going to cover both the baseball and football games, and you can extrapolate how basketball and hockey work from that information. There are a few things that are the same regardless of which game you play. Each athlete involved is represented by a player card. On that card are printed a number of ratings and results tables for dice rolls. For baseball, hitter ratings would be based on things like batting average, extra base hits, home runs, walks, and strikeouts. For pitchers, it would be ERA, hits allowed, walks, and strikeouts. Now, those aren't the only stats taken into account, but you get the picture. Football works differently, and I'll touch on that in a bit. The player is in charge of making strategic and personnel decisions for their team, and they're also responsible for rolling their dice and cross-referencing the results with the printed charts and tables. Now, the game plays just like you'd expect. The pitcher throws a pitch, dice are rolled for the hitter accordingly, and the defensive stats for the players in the field are taken into account. So there's always a chance that dribbler down the third base line could result in an out, or a hit. You never know. And it's also possible that the 180 hitting catcher could hit the game-winning home run, or strike out with the bases loaded. Of course, if you've got Jason Verlander versus a rookie with no numbers to speak of, the chances lean in favor of the pitcher. Flip that script, though, with a virtually unknown pitcher and a hitter the quality of a Nolan Arenado, G-O-N-E, gone. I mentioned earlier that Stratomatic had released an advanced version of the game in the early 70s. Nowadays, every Stratomatic game has three versions as a part of it. Basic, advanced, and super advanced, with more strategic options and more nuanced abilities being added in the more advanced versions. These more advanced options play into the algorithms of the computer game, which also allows for a speedier game overall, since the computer checks the charts for you, which saves a ton of time. New baseball cards are released in January or February of each year, and there have been some controversies among Stratomatic players about the card ratings. Think of them in the same terms as you would players who get pissed off about their Madden ratings. Stratomatic football, as I mentioned, works a bit differently than its baseball counterpart. While there are still player cards involved, it's not quite as simple as just rolling dice and comparing them to the cards. Stratomatic football has five primary running plays and five primary passing plays for the offense to use, and the intended target for that play must also be chosen. The run plays are end run left, off tackle left, line buck, off tackle right, and end run right. Now, obviously, the choice of play will dictate potential success, as the direction the play runs in determines which defensive players the runner will have to deal with. Each of the three types of run, end, off tackle, and line buck, have their own columns to use for roles and results, and the running backs are rated on those types of runs. The five passing plays are flat pass left, looking, flat pass right, short pass, and long pass. The two flat passes and looking use the same chart since they're basically the same type of pass. The only difference, much like the running play, is what side the quarterback is looking to, and that matters because of the defensive players they'll have to deal with. Flat passes are designed to gain 4 to 10 yards, short passes 10 to 15 yards, and long passes are 25 or more. Obviously, these plays can go longer or shorter and can even lose yardage depending on the rolls. And the type of pass also increases the chance of a sack or interception, since the longer the pass, the greater the chance. Just like in the real game, usually. There are four defensive plays to choose from: run, pass, short yardage, and run key. Now, run and pass are the two you'd use most often, while short yardage would be for those running plays you expect to see in third or fourth and short and or goal line situations. Run key is something you'd run when you want to focus on a specific runner. There are also rules that allow for movement and shifting of defensive players, and also allowing for the blitz and a pass rush. I also realize I just did a big info dump, so let me see if I can clarify it a bit by putting some of this to use. Let's say I'm playing a game with my buddy Scott, and he's on offense. I'm not going to name teams here since I'm just going with basics, so stick with me. Scott doesn't have the best quarterback on the planet, so he's going to probably go with mostly running plays, especially since he's got several really good running backs. So he's running plays off the running play chart, and for our purposes here, he's decided to run off tackle left, and he's got his best running back over there. Let's also say that my best defensive lineman is on the left side of the defensive line. For those not familiar with American football, that means he's on the right side of the offensive line and away from where the play is intended to go. But I'm not a dummy. I know his quarterback sucks and he's probably going to run 90% run plays, so I'll call for the run defense. He rolls his dice, I roll mine, and when we check the charts, his back gets stopped after a 4-yard gain, and that's mostly because I don't have my best player on that side of the line. As the game moves on, though, he and I are checking each other's tendencies. Since I know he's going to run a lot, I'll probably start running run-key defensive plays, focusing on that running back and doing everything I can to stop him. The other idea for that is to put the offense into obvious passing situations so I can hopefully abuse that quarterback of his. Anyway, that's my explanation, so I hope it meant something. Strat-O-Matic football also has the options for doing something the baseball version took a very long time to bring into play, a player draft. That means that if you're playing in a league, you pick from among the available players to put on your team, and with any luck, you get the team that suits your play style. And if that sounds familiar, it's exactly what the concept of fantasy football is all about, with the only difference being fantasy football owners depend on the actual numbers posted by their players during the game to earn points. In addition to the pro game, Strat-O-Matic also offers a college version, but that one's primarily for the online computer game. So as we take a look over the history of Strat-O-Matic, we see a game that's been universally loved and praised by multiple generations of players, and those players continue to work to foster love of the game for future generations. There have also been a number of petitions over the years to get Strat-O-Matic Baseball into the Baseball Hall of Fame, as well as Hal Richman. For his part, Richman always downplays his importance to the game, and he has said his biggest reward is the fact that people are still playing his little game all these years later. And with that, we've come to the end of today's show, and the end of our 100th episode. I wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for your support, as it's what's allowed us to get this far. We started small, but have been a lot like the little engine that could, building our audience week by week and topic by topic. And we've still got tons of topics to cover, so here's to another 100 episodes. Next week, we'll get back to our more traditional roots, covering the games Iron Heroes and Nightlife. I wanted to remind you that you've still got time to get your choices in for the best role-playing modules of all time. I'm still compiling numbers from your messages to me, and I'll be covering those in future episodes. I'm also working on compiling a list from various polls I found online during my research, and I plan to have that episode up in about a month or so. So for those who've been asking about these shows, they're coming up and coming up fairly soon. So keep an eye out for that and get your choices in as soon as possible. In the meanwhile, check out our other fine podcast, Bad GM's Campaign Build Along. This week, we take a bit of a breather as I break down where we're at from a game perspective at this point, then build out a couple of jobs for the group to do while we get our main storyline back on track. Bad GM's Campaign Build Along is available wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, badgmproductions.net. The music we use for this show comes from pixabay.com. Check them out for all your license-free, royalty-free music needs. Role-Playing History is a production of Bad GM Productions. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/gaming/badgmprod. On Twitter at BadGMP, YouTube and Tumblr, it's BadGM Productions. You can email us, badgmproductions@gmail.com, and online, the website is badgmproductions.net. Next week, we get a look at Iron Heroes and Nightlife, so get your swords sharpened and your armor cleaned and ready. But that's next week. Until then, I'm Wayne Davis, and your role-playing history.